All right, based on Tuesday night's performance against the Diamondbacks, factoring in his previous three starts, what's the right thing to do with Kyle Hendricks now, especially with Jameson Taillon set to return?
Well, I don't know that the right thing is to sit him down, but I would skip a start. I think, you know, maybe create a false, you know, reason to put him on the 10-day IL and just let him kind of get himself together. But I don't know that you keep rolling him out there. And if you do, I don't know how long you keep doing that, because it hasn't changed and hasn't gotten better, and he doesn't look like he's got it. And he's given up home runs, and he's struggling. I think it's all fine and well to kind of give a nod to how he's done before and to say he's going to be fine. And I heard Jed kind of do that. I just don't know how often you can keep going with it. And maybe it's different when you're back home. Maybe you feel more comfortable with it. But I wouldn't. I think he needs to kind of take some time. I don't think he's ready to go.
No, he's not ready, unfortunately. I mean, who doesn't like Kyle Hendricks? You know, good guy, part of a great team. He's always been kind of taking some hometown discounts, if you will. Wants to be here. You want him around. Says all the right things. Great with the media. Great with the fans. But unfortunately, you know, Father Time is undefeated. It just seems like it's time. It seems like, you know, Jed Hoyer needs to walk out to the mound and take the ball away. This is above Craig Counsell's head even. And I think the first thing you do is he has a forearm strain, or he's got a calf, or he's got a something. And then our guest at 9 o'clock, Tommy Hotovy, can try to work with him and get him right. The Cubs are fortunate that they do have some young arms. But right now, when you're a team that's competing for this division, you know, that's a game that yesterday's game was the one game I was confident on paper that the Cubs were going to win. Now we've had two incredibly wild games. The bullpens are completely taxed for both sides, not just the Cubs side. And you got Jordan Wicks today, who hasn't been exactly lights out. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. But I think we've seen the last of Kyle Hendricks, at least for a little bit.
Two games on this road trip where they feel like they should have won and they blew the lead. First one in San Diego, now last night. You score 11 runs, you should win. Kyle Hendricks is a problem right now, and it's been a while since you've had to say that, but it's a reality they have to face. And whether it's a stint on the injured list or a demotion to the bullpen, I don't know how you put him out there again. He's given up 7 home runs in 17 innings. His career rate is 1 home run per 9 coming into this season. Last year, he gave up 13 home runs in 137 innings. Thank you, Tony Andracki from Marquee. Those numbers summarized well that Kyle Hendricks doesn't have it yet. Maybe he'll get it. It doesn't matter. It's increasingly clear that it doesn't matter to Craig Counsell who starts games, when people come in, the victories in 5 innings, and all he wants is 27 outs to be gotten by somebody, the outgetters. Is Kyle Hendricks one of your 13 best outgetters in the organization? I think so, but I don't think it's a guarantee, especially with Jameson Taillon slated to make his season debut Thursday night against the Marlins at Wrigley Field. That gives you more options. Don't demote Assad. Don't do anything with Ben Brown. Shota is doing lights out work, and then you get Jordan Wicks today. If he has a strong outing, you have a real issue on your hands with Kyle Hendricks. It's uncomfortable, but it's necessary, and it's why Craig Counsell came here, to handle the uncomfortable but necessary decisions.
As a leader, I think you shy away from those questions.
That's the voice of Jed Hoyer. How much did Jed Hoyer's cautious assessment of Seiya Suzuki's oblique strain give you pause when evaluating how the Cubs will manage without him? Who will return first to contribute, Suzuki or the ace of the staff, at least going in, Justin Steele?
I think the fact that this is even a question is a problem, because 10 days on the IO, we talked yesterday about, well, you know, it's not as bad as last year's, and it's a different side and different circumstances. Last year it was a swing, this year he was running. And then you hear Jed Hoyer, and I didn't hear a lot of reassurance. I didn't hear a lot of, well, it's going to be okay. I heard a lot of, I don't know. A lot of uncertainty, a lot of honesty. And that's a problem because Seiya Suzuki injured himself last year in spring training. This year, 2 weeks into the season, maybe he just doesn't do early seasons well. I'm not quite sure. And Jed was honest about that. Is it something they do? It is something about Seiya's makeup. What is it that's causing this annual occurrence, it seems? It's a problem. I wouldn't be surprised if Justin Steele is back before Seiya Suzuki is back. And while that's good for the bullpen, or it's good for everyone in the pitching staff, not so good for the Cubs lineup. So this is something I expected to have more answers to this morning, especially after hearing from Jed. But I think right now, his cautious assessment makes you a little bit more concerned.
That's fine. You know, be cautious, right? What do they say? Like, under-deliver, right? And, you know, let's get this guy back. He'll be back. I have faith that he'll be back. I just hope when he gets back to where he was. That's the bummer, right? Like, he was playing really well. We kind of kidded around yesterday about, you know, potential National League MVP, definitely Cubs MVP maybe. Is there a difference? Is there not a difference? But yeah, you want Justin Steele back ASAP. I mean, the guy pitched, what, 4.5 innings, and he was out, and that's supposed to be the guy that's taking the ball every fifth day, and he's your guy. And he's throwing some bullpens, so we'll hear a little bit. But here's the thing. We'll have a better gauge on this question at 9:05. Like, I think Tommy Hotovy can give us a better idea where Justin Steele is at, because he's been out there. It's not like Justin Steele is sitting still. He's been working out. He's been exercised. He's been throwing bullpens. So I think he is closer than Seiya Suzuki.
Yeah, I hope you are correct, sir. I hope he is. It was really interesting to hear Jed, because he said that last year, the time frame was such that it was like the first spring training game or the first workout, whatever, where it was one swing and it was a significant deal where he injured himself. He had a moderate strain, as he does now, with one swing. And he missed 48 days total, I believe. And that would... Yeah, I don't know that you can... He basically was saying that because it was the start of spring training, he wasn't back. It was the first swing, and then all of a sudden he's out for a while, and that had to do with kind of, what did he have, 4 games in Iowa, something like that? He had to ramp back up because he missed all the spring training. This might be different. You heard the manager, Craig Counsell, say 4 weeks. I assume that's 4 weeks from today. I don't know if that 4 weeks would include a rehab start. I think, you know, being as, if you're, you know, you when you heard the thing initially and you heard the, you saw what happened, you kind of projected that maybe it would be June 1, right? That he may miss time until June 1st, which you better have Steele back by then. But I think I'm going to go with, they got a 4-game set at Milwaukee starting on May 27th. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with aiming for that one to try to get him back, rehabbed, and up and running for May 27th so he can do some damage in Milwaukee.
I'll take your questions. I don't have much to say about this.
Ooh, okay. Which White Sox starter will fare better in the doubleheader later today at 35th and Shields against the Royals? Eric Fetty or Jonathan Cannon? And if Cannon excels after Nick Nastrini did Monday night, how long before the Sox go to the minors and call up another top pitching prospect, like, let's say, Drew Thorpe?
Well, I think what's fascinating is Nick Nastrini, the gift he gets, the prize that he won, is a game Sunday at Philadelphia. He gets to pitch to that lineup. Oh, that's nice. But that's kind of the gift. You hope Cannon is good enough to stay up and remain in the rotation. That would be nice. And as far as Eric Fetty is concerned, I think Cannon will do better just because this is his first MLB start. I think he's going to be shot out of a cannon. He had to wait you know, ready to go yesterday, and I think he'll do very well. I don't think Eric Fetty has been god awful. I think he'll remain in the rotation. I think they have solved their rotation issue for the time being, hopefully. If Destrini can hold up and if Cannon looks good enough and can get another start, then I don't know that you need Drew Thorpe right away. So I might hold off on bringing him up and getting him into the rotation. You might be able to get through a couple rounds with these guys. So I would postpone that a few weeks.
Yeah, one step at a time. I mean, I'm really interested to see Jonathan Cannon, as we joked about yesterday. What a great name to be a pitcher, right? Like Michael Stonebreaker. You talk about, you play middle linebacker.
Best name for a linebacker ever.
Stonebreaker, right? How awesome is that?
Brock Spack was pretty good.
Which one?
Brock Spack.
Okay. Yeah.
Purdue linebacker, coach of Illinois State.
Yeah.
I mean, Brock Spack.
Yeah. It's not bad, but it's not Stonebreaker. It's not Stonebreaker. Yeah,
okay. Stonebreaker's pretty
good. Going way back for Stonebreaker.
You know, I mean,
he was on the same roster as the single worst name in the history of football, which is Lindsey Knapp. Knapp, wake up.
What about NASCAR driver Dick Trickle?
Not good.
People love that.
Or Lions tight end Harry Colon. Anyway, Jonathan Cannon. What a great name for a pitcher, right? Like that's the guy you want to see. That's the attraction. That's the reason to tune in. So I hope for the Sox sake that Cannon is good and Nastrini was good enough and. Maybe they've got some pitching coming up. Maybe they'll develop a pitcher because they sure as heck can't develop a hitter. What is going on with the guy that I used to want the Cubs to trade for, Andrew Vaughn?
I don't
what
know.
What the heck happened
He's
to him?
Big question. Third overall pick. Big disappointment so far. Crochet, Soroka, Fetty, and then who? Maybe Jonathan Cannon. Maybe Nick Nastrini.
Soroka.
I said Soroka. Soroka, Crochet, Fetty, then who? And then?
Nastrini, and then what's his name? Cannon.
Okay.
I'm saying that's five.
I know. All right. I'm just saying, yep, I think that Drew Thorpe can probably have to wait bide his time.
Well, no, that's a good question.
It was the voice of DeMar DeRozan. Let's move over to the Bulls. The Bulls listed both Ayo Dosunmu and Andre Drummond as questionable for tonight's play-in versus the Hawks from Atlanta. Which guy is more needed in the game and why? And how about Batum being out the rest of the season with a detached retina of the right eye?
Yeah, that's a bad injury. I don't know how he got that. It sounds like it hurts. I think that Ayo is the obvious answer, but I don't know if Andre Drummond not playing could really hurt their rebounding and their interior defense. I think Ayo is the obvious answer, but it's also Trey Young is compromised. He's coming back and he played, yeah, he's not played like he has before the injury in the final three games of the season. He's only averaged about 15 points a game since returning, and you wonder if he's going to be at full strength. If he's at full strength, you need Ayo, but Ayo's not going to be at full strength, so maybe they wash each other out. I think Andre Drummond could be a factor, and he makes such an impact in such limited minutes that I think he's the guy I would like to see. I mean, Ayo, they have options. I know the defense is great, but I think of the two, if I had to pick one to play tonight or have available, I would pick Andre Drummond.
Yeah, I would agree with you, David, on Andre Drummond because the Atlanta Hawks are awful at defending the inside. We say, well, just, you know, go to Vooch. Well, the problem is Vooch doesn't really like to hang out inside all that much. I think Alex Caruso can do what Ayo does on defense. So I think you could get away with that. But I think Drummond would be more valuable against the Hawks because I think he can make the Hawks pay with an inside presence.
I think the problem that you have with Atlanta is the fact that they can knock down threes. And the Bulls, obviously, is a real kind of scary ability against a team like the Bulls. So they've got to defend the three. I'm not saying that they can't do that, but they do it better with Ayo. So it is the obvious answer. Ayo Dosunmu trying to help out on Trae Young. It's as simple as that. They've got other guys that can make shots too. And the only game that they lost against Atlanta this year, I think Atlanta took like 40 trays and hit a fairly 20 or something. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they knocked down three-point shots and shot well from three-pointers. And I think that's going to be a major problem. I'm looking forward to talking to Casey Johnson later and get his take. He's been breaking this thing down. You know, it's a play-in game. It's a big game. You want to have all hands on deck. I agree with what you're saying about how much stronger they are in the middle with Andre Drummond. And I wouldn't argue that. It'd be great if they were both in. As far as Batum's concerned, you know, he was no longer really a part of the rotation, but that sucks. A guy like that making, you know, jumping on a team like this and showing a lot of energy, and then he gets poked in the eye or whatever it is. He apparently needs surgery. Too bad.
I've answered this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
With one game left in the Blackhawks season, tomorrow night, that's Thursday, out in L.A. versus the Kings, what's the right way to evaluate a season in which they were the second-worst team in the NHL but felt like progress at times due to Connor Bedard's arrival?
I believe they are 13% now to get the first pick in the draft. That is, we don't even know when the draft is, but we know that they have a 13% chance. So that's great. I mean, if they could get lucky again and keep adding more talent. The progress of Connor Bedard, the idea of seeing his first season in the NHL and knowing that he is on a trajectory to be like a very special player, I think that is the really only good thing about this season. It's the only kind of laudable thing that has happened. You know, they tried to bring some veteran guys in who they might be able to flip, and that didn't happen for them. But they've got a lot more draft capital, and they got another good draft coming. It was great to see a couple of guys, the kid from Notre Dame, guy from Michigan, added to the mix and show a flash here and there. I think it just makes you want all these players to continue to age. And let's hit fast forward a little bit. Let's get these guys going. I hope they also, I don't want to say try to win next year. I don't know that they need to go all in or anything like that. But I really hope that they improve the talent around Bedard. And they'll do some of that internally, but they're going to have to go out and make a couple of moves and make this team better if they really want to compete. And I think for a player that wants to compete like Bedard, that's what they need to do.
I think the highlight of the season is the fact that Bedard has come back and he still played pretty well after that big-time hit he took. That he wanted to come back, I think, is also telling. And you got to like that. You got to like that in a young kid. I almost feel guilty. Like, I think I should stay up tomorrow night, like lean up against a post, old school, when I used to watch Blackhawk Kings play in the playoffs tomorrow night, even though the game means nothing. But, like, do you want them? Like, they'll lose six in a row to end the season if they lose last night.
Yeah,
tomorrow
it's a bad
night
way to lose.
That's not a good way to go out. Yeah. But you want to keep the percentage going in the right direction to get a shot at the number one pick once again.
You would like that. I think, though, people understand in hockey that the Blackhawks they're doing this right. They're embracing the rebuild. They identified a couple key veterans to extend in Dickinson and Mrazek. They have a superstar in Connor Bedard, and that's not exaggerating. Now they got Frankie Nazer. Now they have Kevin Korchinski. Oliver Moore is on the way. This is real talent. You look at also guys who have emerged like Vlasic as a surprise. They've got two first-round draft picks in the next 2 years. They've got five second-round draft picks in the next 2 years. This is going to be a place where they win again, and relatively soon, sooner rather than later. Young talent on the way. Kyle Davidson, Kyle from Chicago, is doing this the right way. Luke Richardson is a guy who's been through a lot, but he is, I think, the right coach to have that temperament. He's done a lot of losing. You hope he doesn't get worn down. But as the season ends tomorrow, there's not this hopelessness that exists around a lot of franchises when they have really bad losing years. There's only one team worse than the Hawks, but you couldn't tell it from watching. I was there on Sunday. The fan base understands, generally speaking, I'm generalizing, obviously. I think the fan base, though, understands what's going on here and is excited, because every night you go to the United Center, you're likely to see 98 score a goal in a way that you've never seen before.
He's worth the price of admission.
He's worth it every single time. So he is Kane and Taze kind of part two. And so this is the Blackhawks 2.0. And I think it's going quite well despite the record.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What do you make of reports that Caitlin Clark's WNBA debut will be May 14th? But there could be a conflict with a second round game five in the NHL playoffs. Would the four-letter network move the hockey game to four-letter network squared? Would Caitlin Clark supersede the NHL? Is she the bigger draw?
Well, I think you only get one chance to have a debut, and if you are ESPN, you've got to recognize the moment. I love playoff hockey. I think that every playoff hockey game is an opportunity to be dazzled, enthralled, whatever verb you want to come up with. There's a chance you're going to see something very special. But there's only one debut, and Caitlin Clark's debut is a thing. If you don't believe that she's that anything that she does is a thing, you're not paying attention. From her jersey sales to her appearances on national morning shows to everything that she does, people want to hear and watch and listen and say that they were part of it. Let them be part of it. If ESPN doesn't do something to make sure that her debut is in front of as many eyeballs as possible, they are badly missing the point.
Well, let me just throw this one out. I don't know that my DVR or your DVRs are, and definitely there's no such thing as a TV guide anymore. Remember when you used to get the TV guide?
Every week.
What's on the three-letter network ABC on this date? I mean, if we're talking about David getting as many eyes as possible, which is what they should be doing, since mm-hmm. it is her debut, this game should be on ABC, not on four-letter network, and definitely not on four-letter network squared.
I saw a story yesterday on TMZ that Caitlin Clark jersey was like the greatest selling jersey ever. People went crazy and bought like Indiana Fever jerseys with her name on it. That blows my mind. Is that going to happen after the draft when Caleb Williams shows up? Is that what happened with Bedard? I think he sold out tons of jerseys. I don't know if he sold them kind of through Canada and the United States, but he certainly sold tons of them here. It's crazy how popular she is.
Caitlin Clark could be more universally popular than Connor Bedard.
Oh, she's more universally universally popular apparently than LeBron, than anyone.
Right now, this week.
I'm just saying, it's crazy. So her debut, I can totally understand why they want to move that. I think that they should have a commitment to the NHL and they should figure something out, whether they move her on earlier and then have the two hockey games following. But I think it's really an insult to move the NHL off of ESPN if you have a contract to broadcast the games, because even if you move to ESPN2, even if you whatever you might do, I agree with you. I think playoff hockey, literally anything can happen. And it's phenomenal to watch playoff hockey. And I really don't have a horse in the race this year, because obviously the Blackhawks didn't make it, and I'm not going to be – I don't know that I would have been cheering for Kaner, but I would have been interested in following it. I don't know that I got a horse in the race. But maybe I'll go for a Canadian team just out of, wishfulness and hopefulness.
Dustin, if it was May 14th on a typical Tuesday night on ABC programming, they would be preempting Will Trent or The Rookie, or maybe a special edition of 2020. So
or The Bachelor or Bachelorette, right? All of that stuff.
Tuesday nights, though, I think
that's good all research, about David.
Will,
nice job.
Will Trent and The Rookie. Now, I want to see The Rookie. I want to see Caitlin Clark. So maybe they can replace The Rookie with The Rookie.
Love
the
it.
Rookie, I believe, is Nathan. What's his name? Fillion, the guy from Castle. Who became a
police officer. Yeah.
You got to be careful.
The Castle guy.
You got to watch out for handsome guys. You don't want to take them off TV.
But doesn't it make the most sense to put the game on ABC? It's a real simple. It's very simple.
Yes.
That's
brilliant.
Just put it on ABC.
Good job.
Would, and I mean this sincerely, I don't know the ratings of all the shows. Would Caitlin Clark outdraw Will Trent? Would she outdraw the rookie?
Caitlin
well,
Clark.
Maybe that show, though, in all seriousness, like if the rookie is doing well,
yeah.
Okay, let's just say it is. The rookie could go on like right after Caitlin Clark's game, and then they could preempt the news a little bit, and hopefully they don't follow it all up. You guys weren't here. But we had a really fun discussion on Monday, the whole follow-up over at CBS over the Billy Joel concert.
Oh, that was awful.
Oh, what did they do? They cut
they interrupted
the last...
in the encore, which was Piano Man. No surprise. I'm not spoiling anything. They literally went to local news in all the Eastern and
abruptly,
Central time zone, CBS local station.
It was Sing Me a Half Song, Piano Man.
It was the Heidi game?
Yes.
Yes.
And so this Friday night, because of all the moaning and groaning, and I'm sure Billy Joel's camp very unhappy, they are re-airing it on CBS.
The entire concert?
The entire, not just the last 90 seconds.
It'd be great if they just played the last minute or two.
They are re-airing it.
How do you cut off the Piano Man?
It's got to be some sort of automatic cutoff, right?
I mean, yeah.
It's like when we break away, something cuts in. It's like
when we go over to Xfinity Sports Radio.
Yeah, exactly. So it was definitely something that was noticed.
But how about, I mean, wow.
I don't think they're going to have to lose a whole lot of sleep about an episode of The Rookie being preempted.
No, but I'm saying just if that is your highest rated show on that particular night, just move that for like the 9 o'clock start going, you know, from 9 to 10 going into the nightly news.
They come down the court. They find Caitlin Clark, game-winning shot from the pay, and they start the news.
That'd be awful.
Balls no, they play. The they start the intro to The Rookie.
All right, we got an extra point next. It's prediction time. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 at the score. And the piano sounds like carnival, and the microphone
smells like a beer, and they sing it. Live from CBS, this is your news now.